All right, so last week, Day of Atonement.
Question.
Yes.
When the veil was torn,
yes.
Did the Pharisees get it, or did they just repair it and keep on going with the same
thing? I'm sure they just repaired it and kept on going, because the temple wasn't destroyed until 70 AD. And even during, there was discussion in the early church, do we make the Gentiles obey the law? You know, are they supposed to do sacrifice? Are they supposed to do all these things, obey the kosher rules? And so I don't know what the Sadducees, because it was the Sadducees who were the priests. The Pharisees were the other Levites that were in the synagogues and whatever. But yeah, I don't know what they did. I'm sure they just repaired it and, yeah.
Pretended like it never happened.
Yeah. Because, I mean, they weren't going to believe regardless. But I don't know that we even have any historical record of what they did with the veil. But I'm sure they just repaired it and kept going until 70 AD when everything was absolutely demolished and then they couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. So, good question. I actually had never even thought of that. But yeah, it seems like the Levitical system just kept going, because even during the early church, you know, Paul was advised to go offer sacrifice to fulfill a vow, right? So, I mean, sacrifices were still being done at the temple. So, yep. Okay, so last week we studied Day of Atonement, the one day when man could enter into the holy place, Holy of Holies, and that was only one man once a year. And if he did it wrong, right, it's all set in the context of Nadab and Abihu, so the punishment was death by God. And remember, this was to be a permanent statute. The people were to be involved as well. It was a fast day. It was a Sabbath day, even if it didn't fall on Saturday. It was whatever day of the week it fell on. It was to be treated like a Sabbath day. Okay? Leviticus 16 is the center of the book, not number of chapters-wise, but theme-wise. 1 through 15, we talked about last week, we need those for Day of Atonement even to make sense. We need to know about the sacrifices, we need to know about the priesthood, and we need to know about clean, unclean laws, because the Day of Atonement is when the tabernacle gets cleansed and reset for another year. Then 17 through 27, the second half of the book, is all about holiness. Okay, and we're going to talk about feasts. Days of feast days, and then it's going to end with blessing and cursing. Okay, but Leviticus 17 starts the holiness code. Okay, holiness was to affect every aspect of life. We talked about clean, unclean laws being somewhat about preferences. We honor God in our preferences, not all of them, but like for the food. Right, because you are God's chosen people, then you are going to choose to eat what he says you can eat, not eat what he says you can't eat. Okay, now we get into more practical holiness. How are we going to be holy in our everyday life? Okay, the focus for these chapters is not just on the priests. The priests are mentioned, but it's not just for the priests, it's for everybody. Okay, a lot of the sacrificial laws, yeah, the person had to know it as well. But the focus kind of was on the priests, because they were the ones officiating it, okay? So now the focus shifts more to your average layman. They had to know these rules, okay? And even the clean, unclean laws was kind of focused on the priests, because they were the ones that had to declare if the skin disease or the mark on the house was clean or unclean, okay? And they didn't want to get it wrong, because if they did, they defiled the tabernacle. That could be big trouble, okay? So everyone in Israel was to be holy. Remember, even in Exodus, they were to be a holy nation. Okay, a kingdom of priests. Okay, one of my commentators said, a love for holiness and a desire to obey God are evidences of spiritual life. Okay, and that was true in the Old Testament. It's true today too, right? We need to love holiness and have a desire to obey God's rules. Okay, if we have no regard for what God has said, then there's no evidence that you are saved. Okay, so chapter 17 is going to be about sacrifice and eating blood. Okay, so can someone read for me Leviticus 17, 1 through 9?
speak to Aaron, his sons, and all of the Israelites, and tell them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Anyone from the house of Israel who slaughters an ox, sheep, or goat in the camp, or slaughters it outside the camp, instead of bringing it to the entrance of the tent of meeting to present it as an offering to the Lord before his tabernacle, that person will be considered guilty. He has shed blood and must be cut off from his people. This is so the Israelites will bring the Lord the sacrifices that they have been offering in the open country. They are to bring them to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting and offer them as a fellowship sacrifice to the Lord. The priest will then sprinkle the blood on the Lord's altar at the entrance to the tent of meeting and burn the fat as a pleasing aroma to the Lord. They must no longer offer their sacrifices to the goat demons that they have been prostituting themselves with. This will be a permanent statute for them throughout the generations. Say to them, anyone from the house of Israel or from the foreigners who live among them who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice, but does not bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting to sacrifice it to the Lord, that person must be cut off.
Okay, so verse 1 and 2. Lord spoke to Moses, speak to Aaron, to his sons, so it's the priests, but also to all the sons of Israel. Okay, so this is for everyone, not just for the priests. Now, the rule says you are not allowed, verse 3, to slaughter an ox, sheep, or goat in the camp or outside the camp. It has to be brought to the tabernacle. Okay, so now there is disagreement on what this means. Is this just solely referring to a peace offering, okay, just sacrifices, or is this referring to any meat? Like, you couldn't kill any lamb and eat it unless you brought it to the tabernacle. Okay, so there are people that fall on both sides of the issue. My commentaries were split. Okay, so one thought one thing, one thought another. And I'll talk about reasons for both. Okay? So for the first that thinks that this applies to any killing of any animal. All right. So in other words, when they were in the wilderness, if they wanted to eat meat, they had to bring it as a peace offering to the Lord. Okay. And then that was the only way they were to eat meat. They were not allowed to take an old sheep and just kill it and eat the meat. Okay. So they think this because then if you bring it as a peace offering before the Lord, it'll be killed the right way. God would get the fat. Okay. Yes, sweetie.
Did they just come in without being welcomed, or did they just be welcomed and come in? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Okay.
So the problem with this view is that in Deuteronomy 12, let's go there. Can someone read for me verses 20 to 24? Deuteronomy 12, 20 to 24.
Be careful to listen to all the words which I command you.
No, I don't think that's right. Deuteronomy 12, 20.
Oh, I thought you said 28.
Oh, sorry, 20 to 24.
Okay.
That's right, just...
chooses to put his name is too far from you, then you may slaughter of your herd and flock, which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you, and you may eat within your gates whatever you desire. Just as a gazelle or a deer is eaten, so you will eat it. The unclean and the clean alike may eat of it. Only be sure not to eat the blood, for the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the flesh, the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out on the ground like water.
Okay, so when they're about to go into the land, Moses says to them, if you want to eat meat, you can kill it, and that's fine, okay? If you look at verse 7 here in Leviticus 17, it says, they shall no longer sacrifice their sacrifices to the goat demons with which they play the harlot. This shall be a permanent statute. Okay, so if it's a permanent statute that if you want to eat meat, you have to bring it as a peace offering, it doesn't seem very permanent because it lasts 40 years. Okay. There are arguments on both sides. But and verse 5 says, or verse, the verse 5 says, the reason is so that the sons of Israel may bring their sacrifices. Okay, so it seems to be talking specifically about sacrifices. One argument for this occurs, this applies to all killing, is that if you're sacrificing to the goat demon, right, and you can argue, oh, I was just killing this lamb to eat it, right? And so if you make a rule that you can only eat meat if you bring it as a peace offering, then that stops any sort of loophole or excuse of, oh, I wasn't sacrificing to a demon, I was just killing it to eat meat. Okay, so there are arguments on both sides. The word slaughter here in verse 3, the Hebrew word is specifically used for sacrifice, not just of killing an animal to eat it. Okay. But regardless, whatever is true, whatever is the right interpretation, I mean, I would lean more towards this is talking about just sacrifices. The offense is as serious as murder. Okay, if you look at verse 4, the end of it, it says, he has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people. Right? Right above that, blood guiltiness is to be reckoned to that man. Okay, so this offense is as serious as murder, which would make sense if it's you're sacrificing, right, to another god, right? Because then that's breaking of the first commandment. Okay, again, we've talked about this before when it says cut off from among his people. Some people think that that means capital punishment. Some people think that it means you're just expelled from the nation, okay? But a lot of people think that if you are cut off, it means you are punished by God directly, okay? Probably with a premature death. And the idea is, too, you do this, and you might do it in secret, and so no one else knows. And that's the thing. A lot of times when it says cut off, it might be something that nobody else knows about, right? So they can't kill you or expel you from the nation because they don't even know you did it. Okay, but if God is the one that then is the one that brings judgment, it could come at any time and you don't know. So if you know, hey, if I do this, God's going to be the one that judges me, brings punishment, then you kind of live in fear, right, that any time, any day, God could do something about it and you don't know when it's going to come. Okay, verse 5 through 7, this is the reason for the command. Okay, the reason is so that the sons of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they were sacrificing in the open field. Okay, they need to sacrifice in the proper way to God. Okay, they can't sacrifice to the goat demons, clearly, but also they can't just sacrifice anywhere they want. They have to worship God the way God has commanded them to worship him. Okay, Nadab and Abihu, right? Possibly they had great intentions. They just decided to do things their own way. Maybe make their own mix of incense. Maybe bring their own fire. Whatever it was that they did that was wrong. But God says, no, you have to treat me as holy. You have to worship me the way I command to be worshipped. You're not allowed to offer a sacrifice, you know, anywhere you want. And that was the problem, right, when they got to Canaan. And you enter the era of the kings as everyone was sacrifices on the high places, any high place. Okay? So you had to bring your sacrifices to temple or to tabernacle. How did they? Sorry?
They went downhill so quickly. I mean, we just built the temple.
The tabernacle. Right. But
and now all of a sudden they're...
But Joyce, this is the same, I mean, these are the same people that built the golden calf and that complained a gajillion times wandering through the wilderness right after God parts the Red Sea for them. I mean, well, okay, that's partially too, partially not too, right? We talked about when they were building the tabernacle, that was like one of Israel's high points because it's like everything they did, it says over and over again, they did exactly as the Lord commanded. They did exactly as the Lord commanded, right? So it's true. They got excited. They got ready to build the tabernacle. Everyone participated. Moses had to say, stop bringing gifts, right? There's too much. We have enough. But I think it shows the true depravity of human nature. Unless God changes our heart, we will always stray. It doesn't matter what signs we see, what miracles are done. Doesn't matter if someone raises from the dead, right? Our heart is desperately wicked, and we will never, ever, ever choose God. And so the goat demons seem like a good option.
But after the golden calf,
I know. The goat team. Right. And remember, too, we talked about when they left Egypt, they left with a mixed multitude, right? So it wasn't not that even the descendants of Jacob were all that great, right? But it wasn't necessarily just the descendants of Jacob. It was anyone else who, through the plagues, believed in God. Now, you would think if they believed in God enough to leave Egypt, maybe they would be a little more faithful. But who knows? They're going to also bring all the baggage of their background and growing up. And remember, this generation of Israelites, they were raised in Egypt, saw worship of all these other gods. I mean, that's what they were surrounded with all the time. And so to worship just one God would have been a very foreign concept and probably very difficult to do. And, you know, and we have to also remember, they did not have full revelation. They would have had the book of Job, and that's it. Okay? Because Moses is writing these books at some point during these 40 years of wandering. Okay? Now, we're still at the very beginning of those 40 years of wandering. So and he's still getting revelation, so he wouldn't have even had time to write it down yet. So they are hearing it spoken from Moses. Right? Because God is saying, command them, you know, tell this to the people, but they don't have it written down. And the most they have is the law from Exodus and now Leviticus, right? They wouldn't have had Genesis. Maybe they would have known Genesis through it being passed down orally, but they don't, their revelation is very small, and God progressively revealed revelation and held people accountable for what had been revealed to them. Okay, and remember, this is the first time that God has even presented a full solution to the sin problem. Right? Prior to this, we don't know what God had said to Cain and Abel. We don't know exactly what God said to Noah. Right? I mean, we have what's written down, but we don't know if there's other. I mean, obviously Cain and Abel knew to sacrifice, but nowhere in Scripture is it recorded that God told them specifically how to sacrifice. But from the story, we know that he must have, right? Because Cain did it wrong. Whatever he did was wrong, and Abel, whatever he did was right. And so there was a wrong and a right. So we don't have all that, and it's not until now, even with Day of Atonement, that we actually have a system in place that their sins can be dealt with. So, I mean, yes, it's frustrating to read it. And it's like, oh my goodness, people, get it through your head. But they're also way pre-Messiah, like thousands of years pre-Messiah, 1,500 years pre-Messiah. And we are 2,000 years post-Messiah. So, and even today, right? We have the word. We have the full revelation. And yet, how many times do you hear of quote-unquote Christians falling off the deep end, right? And we have it all. Okay, so man's heart has not changed. So even with full revelation, unless God changes your heart, you're not going to do it right. And so God's patience with me is astounding because, you know, my kids do one little thing and I fly off the handle. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, how many times has God, you know, I know what's right to do and yet I choose to do what's wrong and God is patient with me one more time, you know. And so he was very patient with Israel. I mean, it got to a point, they went into exile, right? But he was patient with them for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So it is frustrating to read and be like, how did you not get it? But our hearts are evil. Good question. Okay, so in verse 7, it says, they shall no longer sacrifice their sacrifices to the goat demons with which they play the harlot. Or I think Marian's version said they prostitute themselves. Okay, so worshiping another god is spiritual adultery. And this metaphor is used throughout the entire Old Testament, all over and over again. I mean, the entire book of Hosea. Okay? So, if you were going to bring a sacrifice, verse 5 and 6, the blood had to be dealt with in the proper way, and the fat had to be offered up before the Lord. Okay, God had been very specific about how he wanted sacrifices done, so you couldn't just do it any old way, anywhere you wanted. Okay, you had to follow God's rules. Okay, verse 7 again, we talked about this. It was said to be a permanent statute. Okay, and if you think that this applies to sacrifices to other gods or sacrifices in general, then it would apply even in Canaan. When they were to only bring sacrifices to temple. Okay, then verses 8 and 9. Then you shall say to them, any man from the house of Israel or among the aliens who sojourns among them who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice. Okay, so verse 1 through 7 is dealing mostly with peace offerings or fellowship offerings. And that was the offering where you got to eat the meat. Okay, you got to eat part of the meal. It was a meal with God. Okay, but now this is talking about burnt offerings or any other kind of sacrifice. You have to bring it to the doorway of the tent of meeting and offer it to the Lord. Okay, if you don't, now you are offering a sacrifice to another god and you're not allowed to do that. And notice, even the foreigners that live in Israel, if you are going to live among the Israelites, there were certain rules that you had to obey. Some people think that these aliens are proselytes, so they've converted to Judaism, and some think that they're just foreigners that live among them, okay? But if you were a foreigner, you were not allowed to sacrifice to your own gods. If you didn't believe in Yahweh, if you believed in your own gods, you were not allowed to practice your religion that way, okay? If you chose to live among the Israelites, you had to observe the Sabbath, okay? And you were not allowed to sacrifice, only bring sacrifices and to tabernacle or temple. Yeah. Yep.
Everybody's got their own religion.
Right. 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 Which God never compels man to believe, right? So God does let man choose to some extent, right? And you hold that intention. It's a paradox, right? How do we get free choice when God has chosen us before the foundation of the world, okay? But God never compels man to believe, so we, in turn, can never compel someone else to believe. And the government certainly is, it is not their job to compel anyone to believe anything, okay? So there is that freedom of religion, which even God espouses, right? But the difference between Israel and America is in Israel, God was king. Okay? God is the government. And so there, and someday, right, God will be king again, and every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. Okay? But until God is king again, there has to be freedom of religion. People should be allowed to choose to believe what they want to believe. Okay? We cannot force them to believe the truth. I mean, because if you force someone to believe something, it's not true belief. You know, they might conform on the outside, but that's it. Okay, questions, verses 1 through 9. Okay, can someone read 10 to 16?
If any one of the house of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn among them eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and will cut him off from among his people. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it for you on the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood that makes atonement by the life. Therefore I have said to the people of Israel, no person among you shall eat blood, neither shall any stranger who sojourns among you eat blood. Anyone also of the people of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn among them, who takes in hunting any beast or bird that may be eaten, shall pour out its blood and cover it with earth. For the life of every creature is its blood. Its blood is its life. Therefore, I have said to the people of Israel, you shall not eat the blood of any creature, for the life of every creature is its blood. Whoever eats it shall be cut off. And every person who eats what dies of itself or what is torn by beasts, whether he is a native or a sojourner, shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. Then he shall be clean. But if he does not wash them or bathe his flesh, he shall bear his iniquity.
All right. Don't eat blood. Over and over. Don't eat blood. Get the point. Don't eat blood. All right. So blood was not to be eaten or drunk. Okay. And these rules apply to the alien as well. Okay. So the foreigner wasn't allowed to do this either. Okay. This rule goes all the way back to Noah. If we look, I think we did this when we covered this before, but can someone read for me Genesis 9, verse 4? Genesis 9, verse 4. Okay, so this is, remember, prior to the flood, God had only given man the fruit and the vegetables to eat. Now, it isn't to say they didn't eat meat, but that is all that God had specifically allowed, right? Because remember, before the flood, every thought was evil, so I'm sure they did. After the flood, God gives Noah meat to eat. He can eat everything, okay, except not the blood. Okay, so even back from Noah, the prohibition was no blood. Okay, so why? Oh, well, and the punishment is you're going to be cut off. And again, that could be judgment from God because you could potentially eat blood and nobody knows about it, right? And so, but God does, and so he's going to bring judgment. Okay, why? Why can we not eat blood, or could they not eat blood? Okay, the first reason given is that the life is in the blood. Okay, the blood symbolizes life. When you spill your blood, it's another way of saying you die. Okay? So by not eating the blood, you are honoring life. And if you eat blood, you are despising life. It is a sign that you are despising life. Okay, the second reason given. Okay, so that reason is in verse 11. Life of the flesh is in the blood. And the second reason, again, in 11. For I've given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls. Blood is the means by which God has chosen to make atonement, to save them, to bring salvation. It's symbolized, right, in the Old Testament with the blood of the bulls and goats and sheep. And then ultimately is fulfilled in the blood of Christ. Okay, it is the blood that brings atonement. It's also the means of making things holy or cleansing, right? Day of Atonement, how do you make everything clean again? You sprinkle it with blood, which would be like, makes it dirty. But no, that is the means God has chosen to make things holy, to cleanse them. Okay, so you have to have reverence for what God has chosen to use to make atonement and to make things holy. The blood belongs to God, the giver of life, and so it is not for man's consumption.
Makes me think twice about licking my finger after
testing sugar. Oh. Okay, we'll talk about New Testament at the end. Okay, all right. So don't eat the blood. Now, verse 13, when any man hunts, well, any man from the sons of Israel or aliens, right, hunt, catch a beast or bird, right, they had to kill it in the proper way and pour out its blood and cover it with earth. Okay, so there was specific rules on what you were to do, how you were to kill animals so that you could eat them. Okay, you had to properly drain the blood, cover it with dirt, maybe so that there was no chance of anything eating the blood, right? If you cover it all up with dirt. Okay. Then verses 15 through 16, this is the same that we've talked about in chapter 11, right? Which was part of the animal laws, what you could eat and could not eat, right? If an animal died another way, you could eat it, but then you would be unclean. And in Deuteronomy 14, verse 21, it says you should just not eat it and you should just give it to the alien, the foreigner living among you. Okay? That's Deuteronomy 14, 21. You should just give it to the alien. All right, so what do we do with these laws, especially since it goes back to Noah, right? What about us? Do we have to not eat blood? I mean, we're not dealing with sacrifices today, right? I mean, that's not a problem. But what about the blood? So let's go to Acts 15. And can someone read for me verse 29? Why don't you do 28 and 29? 29 starts in the middle of the sentence. Acts 15, 28 and 29.
Things you will do well.
Okay, so this is the Jerusalem Council, right? And this was a big deal because up to this point, Israel was they were the chosen people. They were the nation of God. To be saved, you had to convert. You had to become Jewish, okay? And we know what happened. Rahab, right? She was a Canaanite. She's in the line of Christ. She converted. She married a Jewish man, and her descendants became Christ, okay? So we know what happened. Now, all of a sudden, Christ has come, okay? And the church is starting, and Paul has gone out to the Gentiles. And now, all of a sudden, you have all these people from all these different religions coming into the church. What in the world do we do with them? Does the law still apply? Does it not apply? What parts of the law apply? What parts of the law don't apply? Up to this point, it's been the law applies. You have to follow the whole law. Now that Christ has come and fulfilled the law, what in the world do we do? Okay, so there was a big argument. Everyone, all the big wigs, right, in the church got together, and this is what they came up with. Okay, that you don't have to obey the law, i.e. you don't have to be circumcised, and you don't have to follow kosher, right? Because those were the two really big things that set Israel apart, was the circumcision and their diet. But they were to abstain from things sacrificed to idols and from blood, and so things strangled, right? If it's strangled, their blood's not drained and it's going to, whatever. And from fornication, okay? So they were not to eat the blood. That's what Jerusalem is telling the Gentile church. Okay, but that also changes. Okay, let's go to 1 Corinthians 8:8. Okay, can someone read for me 1 Corinthians 8:8?
Food will not commend us to God, for we are no worse off if we do not eat it, and no better off if we do.
Okay, and then can you also read verse 13?
Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble.
Okay, so what Paul is telling the Corinthians is that it doesn't matter what you put in your mouth, right? That is not going to make you holy or not holy. Okay. The idea in the New Testament that Paul preaches is that we need to be considerate of others. If me eating something is going to make somebody else violate their conscience or sin, then I need to curb my own freedom and not eat, you know, what I want, to be sensitive to them. Okay. And then let's also read 1 Corinthians 10 verse 27. Why don't you read verse 25 through 27? 1 Corinthians 10, 25 to 27.
Eat anything that is sold in the meat market without asking questions for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and all it contains. If one of the unbelievers invites you and you want to go, eat anything that is set before you without asking questions for conscience.
Okay, so here Paul's saying, if you go to the meat market, you don't necessarily know how it's been killed. You don't know if it's been offered to idols or not. But just don't ask. And it's okay. It's not a big deal. It's just food. Okay? If you get invited over to an unbeliever's house, you have no idea how that food's been prepared, anything, right? And that's why the Israelite could not eat with the Gentile. Now Paul's saying, go eat. Not even with the Gentile a believer. Go eat with the Gentile unbeliever. Okay, and don't ask questions. Then it goes on, verse 28, but if anyone says to you, this meat sacrificed to idols, do not eat it for the sake of the one who informed you. So you're not eating it, not because you can't eat it and be wrong if you ate it, but you are not eating it to be an example to the unbeliever, right? So the idea is food is just food. It's just, you know, what goes in your mouth just comes out. It doesn't make you clean or unclean, but you restrict what you do and do not eat for other people's sake or for your own conscience sake. If your conscience tells you it's wrong, then you better not do it, okay? But there are not strict rules in the New Testament. You should never eat any blood, or you should never not eat meat sacrificed to idols, because basically here Paul's saying, if it's been sacrificed to idols, who cares? The idol's not even real anyway. Okay, it's just food. But if it's going to cause someone else to stumble, or the unbeliever specifically tells you, right, then don't eat it for their sake, okay, for somebody else's conscience. Does that make sense? Oh, my goodness. Oh, all right, questions. All right, chapter 18. This will be an interesting chapel for the littles, if anyone read ahead. Okay.
Yeah. Detestable.
Yes. Okay, so Leviticus 18, we get into personal morality. Okay, so even God gets to dictate even your most intimate personal life, and you must be holy. Okay, this sets Israel apart from her neighbors. Now, this might not be so obvious on the outside, right? But over and over and over again in this chapter, God says, don't be like the others. Don't be like Egypt. Don't be like the Canaanites. Okay, so circumcision and their diets really set them apart. But this, their sexual morality also really set them, was supposed to really set them apart. Okay, they did not. Of course, they did not obey. There were times they did and times they did not. Okay? 7 times in this chapter, Israel is warned against being like her neighbors. Okay? In the area of sexual immorality. Right? And why? 6 times God says, I am the Lord, or I am the Lord your God. This is the justification. Why do you act this way? Because God is God. Okay? And this is what he has said, and this is how he has set it up to work. So God is holy and expects Israel to be holy. Chapters 18 to 20, 25 times it says, I am the Lord, or I am the Lord your God. So why should you be holy, chapters 18 to 20? Because God is God. He is your God. And he gets to dictate how you act. Even in who you marry and what you do, God determines that. Right? He has told you specifically who you can and cannot marry. Exodus 20 verse 2 and Deuteronomy 5 verse 6, it says, I am the Lord your God, and it's the introduction to the Ten Commandments. So in the two places we have the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, it's introduced with, I am the Lord your God, okay? Then here are the rules. So now, 25 times in 18 to 20, we have, I am the Lord your God. So these are the laws that God has given, and he's given them because he is God, and he gets to dictate reality, and he gets to dictate how things work. So we better listen up and obey. I mean, 25 times, that is a lot. Okay, this is also a defense of marriage, which God created. Okay, everything in here is going to destroy marriage. Marriage and the family is the cornerstone of society and points back to creation, right? Because it was God that created marriage and created man and woman to begin with, created the first family. So, right, sex is truly defined as between husband and wife. Anything else is a deviation and is immorality. It's deficient and tarnished. Okay? So if and when Israel obeyed these rules, they would be truly set apart from the surrounding nations. They would be very different. Okay, notice I said if, right? Because a lot of times they didn't, okay? But when they did, they were going to be different. Right. Oh, right. All these things. Right. Right. Well, no, they, well, we know that. Every rule God sets down, they're going to disobey. Okay.
Also, going a little farther, I'm sure you'll cover this. He asked a question. He goes, the guys have like key chapter and verses.
Mm-hmm.
I have to remember. Exodus apparently is.
Or Leviticus.
Is 19:2, because I am holy.
Yeah.
You will be holy.
Right.
And he said, in that context, how they're supposed to be set apart, everybody else around them mixes everything up, which messes everything.
Yes. Yes. Right.
The main message of Leviticus.
Right. You do not mix what is not to be mixed. You keep things set apart. Exactly. Yep. All right. Can someone read for me verses 1 through 6?
sons of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. You shall not do what is done in the land of Egypt where you live, nor are you to do what is done in the land of Canaan where I am bringing you. You shall not walk in their statutes. You are to perform my judgments and keep my statutes, to live in accord with them. I am the Lord your God. So you shall keep my statutes and my judgments, which by which a man may live if he does them. I am the Lord.
Verse 6, 2.
Approach any blood relative of his to uncover nakedness. I am the Lord.
Okay, so these verses start out with, right, the first thing Moses is to say to the sons of Israel is, I am the Lord your God. Okay, so this is the reason for the whole chapter, and really for the rest of the book. Why are we holy? Why do we do these things? Because God is our God. Okay, this phrase should do three things. First, it should remind Israel of their salvation from Egypt. Because if you look at that, it says, I am the Lord. Lord is all capitalized, which means it is what? Word.
Yahweh.
Yahweh. So it says, I am Yahweh, your God. God revealed that specific name to Israel in the context of the Exodus. Saving, right? That is what he told Moses at the burning bush. Moses says, who should I say sent me? It says, I am who I am. Yahweh is, it means to be, okay? So that is the name, and God uses that name. And remember, all of Exodus, we talked about revealing the name of God is not just revealing his title, but his essence, who he is. So that name reminds Israel of who God is and when he gave it to them, which is the Exodus, bringing them out, okay? Two, it should remind Israel that they are to be holy because God is holy, right? It's 19 verse 2, but twice it's in chapter 11 we talked about in the food laws, okay, 11:44. That they are to be holy because God is holy. And third, it is their motivation for obedience. They were to obey out of love for God because he had redeemed them. Okay, because he was the Lord their God. I am the Lord your God. You shall not do what is done. Okay? So, in Egypt, the royal family often married brothers and sisters. They had to keep the blood, you know, they had to keep the royal family going. So, I mean, we know they did it in England, too, and that's why a lot of the kings had issues, right? Because there was a lot of intermarriage in the family. Okay? In Canaan, homosexuality was accepted, right? And we know this, right? Because Sodom and Gomorrah. Right? They were there. And even some forms of bestiality were okay. All right? So Israel was not to be like Egypt or Canaan. Okay? End of verse 3, it says, you shall not walk in their statutes. Okay? This idea is what characterizes your life. These should not be characteristics of your life. This should not be your habit. Okay? Instead, verse 4, you are to perform my judgments and keep my statutes. Okay, so not what Egypt and Canaan says, not from where you came from or where you're going, instead what I say. To live according with them. I am the Lord your God. So you shall keep my statutes and my judgments, by which a man may live if he does them. I am the Lord. Okay, so they were to obey God. These laws that he's going to give are so obvious that there is no justification given other than I am the Lord your God. Okay. He doesn't say, you know, like with the blood, he said the life is in the blood and it's for atonement. You know, he gives kind of a reason. These, there's no other reason really given. Yes. Right. Right. Except for the only justification given is I am the Lord your God. Okay. These rules help define a family. A nation cannot exist if the family unit is not well defined, right? The family is the foundation of society, which we can see in our own crumbling nation, right? You destroy the family, you destroy the nation. Okay, verse 5, it says, you shall keep my statutes, my judgment, by which a man may live. Okay, the idea there is that it will be a happy and blessed life. With God's blessings, if you obey what he has said. Okay? Verse 6, this is a summary of basically 7 to 18, is verse 6, okay? None of you shall approach any blood relative of his to uncover nakedness. I am the Lord. Okay? So what we're going to get is basically incest laws. And what's interesting is incest in Israel might have been more difficult to avoid or more tempting because of two things. First, Deuteronomy 7 verse 3, they were not to marry a foreigner. Okay? They were not to marry outside of an Israelite. Okay? So that narrows their options. And then two, in Numbers 36, 6 to 9, it's talking about what happens if the daughter inherits and then she marries out, and then what happens to the land, and then you're going to lose part of your land. Okay? So it was strongly encouraged that you marry within your tribe or your clan so that the land would stay within that. Okay, so you might actually be marrying a distant cousin or some sort of relative. Okay, it would be more likely because we want to keep the land within the tribes and we're not allowed to marry a foreigner. Okay, not that they couldn't marry between tribes, but it was strongly encouraged that they marry within their own tribe to keep the land
now, like,
there.
Like their kind of thought,
or yeah, it's what God said. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. In Numbers 36, 6 through 9. Yep. Okay, so you have to have strict and detailed incest laws. Okay, that's what we're going to get. Okay, when it says blood relative in verse 6, that is literally flesh of his flesh. Okay, so a blood relative is your own flesh, basically. It's coming from your flesh. Uncovered nakedness is a euphemism for sex. And man and wife are one flesh. And to uncover the nakedness of one is to uncover the nakedness of both. If you look at verse 7, it says, you shall not uncover the nakedness of your father, that is the nakedness of your mother, right? Saying don't marry or don't sleep with your mom or marry your mom. Why? That uncovers your father's nakedness. Why? Because they're one flesh. Okay. Nakedness after the fall is always associated with shame. Okay. All right. We're not going to read all of these, but 7 through 18. Okay. This is going to speak to the man because he generally takes the initiative. Okay. And I'm just going to list everyone you're not allowed to marry. Okay. So you are not allowed to marry your mother. Your stepmother, well, okay, your aunt, or your aunt by marriage. Okay, so obviously, your mom is off limits. Your stepmom, if your mom dies and your dad gets another wife, you can't marry her. Okay, your aunt, either your mom's sister or your dad's sister, or your aunt by marriage, your dad's brother's sister. You are not allowed to marry your sister or your half-sister. I mean, this is how detailed God is. Okay, this is, if you read it, it's all there. Your stepsister. So if your mom dies and your dad remarries and that woman has a daughter, you're not allowed to marry her. Your stepdaughter. Your sister-in-law, your daughter-in-law, or your wife's sister. Okay, think who in Israel's history should be a prime example of this? Who married sisters? Yes, Jacob. Did that turn out well? No. Okay, don't marry your wife's sister. Okay, and you are not allowed to marry your granddaughter. Or your step-granddaughter.
In Jacob's case, though, he does tricks.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. I'm not, like, saying that, you know, like, that's a free pass or anything.
Right, but, yeah. Yes, he did get tricked. Okay. So, that is the list of who you are not allowed to marry. Now, this is not specifically talking adultery because that is issued later on. So, if your dad dies, you're not allowed to marry your mom. OK, Okay, so these are off limits if the husband dies. Okay, if, you know, whatever. Yeah, whatever. Any of these. You know, if your aunt, if her husband dies, you're not allowed to marry your aunt or your aunt by marriage. Okay, so this is all talking about if the husband is dead. These people are still off limits, even if they're quote-unquote free. Okay, a lot of times, these were people that lived in your house. Okay, maybe not necessarily all the time, but a lot of these, your mother, even maybe your aunts could have lived all together, okay? Your sisters, your stepsister, whatever. Okay, all sister-in-law, daughter-in-law, all these were off limits to marry. Okay, and that's what's listed out in detail, verses 7 to 18. Does anyone see a glaring omission? What's the loophole? Interesting. Yeah.
So you're saying sons and brothers, the boy left out.
Well, no, okay, so no, because this is speaking to boys. We're assuming this is speaking to boys, right? Okay, because these are all females listed up here. Okay, but what one female is not? Yes, daughter. Right? You're not allowed to marry your granddaughter, your step-granddaughter, your stepdaughter. But daughter is not listed. Okay, but no, it's omitted most likely because it was already accepted that you did not marry your daughter. Okay, that was more common practice. And so God is addressing the things that the Egyptians and the Canaanites actually do, right, as opposed to everyone knows they're not supposed to marry your daughter. I don't know how everyone doesn't know you're not supposed to marry your mom, but... anyways, okay. That's true. Yeah.
What about grandma?
Yeah. Well, there might be some things that they just take for granted. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, there is going to be an exception to this. It's one of these. Yeah. Okay, so if you look at verse 10, it says, the nakedness of your son's daughter or your daughter's daughter, their nakedness you shall not uncover, for their nakedness is yours. Okay, this is your son's daughter, so this would be Abigail in my mom's case, right? Right, because that is a direct descendant. Okay, it is your nakedness. So marriage creates a vertical blood and a horizontal blood relationship. So vertical is your children, your offspring down the line. Okay, the horizontal would be between spouses. Okay, right? So, and even girls who marry into the family, like a daughter-in-law, right, they are now considered the children. So I would be considered Ken and Becky's child. Right, so now I become off limits to Kenny, right? Because I am now, yes, through marriage, I have now entered into their blood. Even though I'm not technically their blood, I am now considered their blood.
Even if Kyle were to die, right, technically you are still
off limits to Kenny, correct. Except, there is an exception to that. Let's go to Deuteronomy 25. Oh, her son, Kenny. Her son.
what?
25.
But it does say daughter-in-law up there.
Yeah.
It did. I mean, that's why it
goes. Can someone read for me Deuteronomy 25, verse 5 and 6?
When brothers live together, and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as a wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from his.
So the exception is if Kyle and I got married and we had no children, and then Kyle dies. Now it is Kenny's responsibility only as an unmarried man. If Kenny already has a wife, it doesn't apply. If I have children, it doesn't apply. Okay, so only if the brother is single and the wife has no children, then the brother is supposed to take her, and then the firstborn bears the name of the dead brother. Presumably the rest of the children then belong to the brother that's alive. Does that make sense? And this is, right, the rules that then the Sadducees, who didn't believe in a resurrection, said there were seven brothers, right, and the women, like, marries them all and there's no kids, right? Who's, yeah, yeah. Okay, it's back to this law. So there was an exception, but if the brother is married, doesn't apply, and if the wife has children, then it doesn't apply.
And that's what Judah did with his sons, right?
Yes. Yeah, and that's before this, these rules. So that must have been tradition even before, but yes. Because he told Tamar, wait until my son grows up, and then he had no intention of giving her to his third son. Yes.
Of the husband that died.
Yes.
Or the son that died.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Okay.
What if you have a girl first?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. If you look at verse 9, it says, the nakedness of your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter, whether born at home or born outside. So your nakedness shall not cover. So you're like, okay, why does it matter where you're born? Okay. What this means most likely is whether raised at home or whether raised somewhere else. Okay, it's because it says your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter. So if your mother had been previously married and either her husband died or they got divorced and she has a daughter, okay? Possibly when mom comes to your family, maybe daughter stays behind in daddy's home and is raised there, right? She is still off limits, okay? Whether raised at your home or raised outside somewhere else, she's still off limits, okay? It's your mother's daughter, and technically there's no blood relation there, right? But it's your mother's daughter, so she's off limits to you, okay? Yes, yes. But technically, it's your stepsister, right, that is no blood relation to you, and she might not even live in your household, right? She might be raised, you know, maybe grandma kept her or whatever. Who knows? I don't know. But even if she is in another home, she is still off limits. She is your stepsister because she is your stepmother's daughter, right? Or it could even be your mother's daughter, right, if that you're, you know, they have you as a son. Nope. Okay. And then verse 18, we kind of mentioned on this, you shall not marry a woman in addition to her sister. Notice what it says, as a rival while she is alive. So you can marry your wife's sister if your wife dies. Okay. So while your wife is alive, you are not allowed to take her sister. If your wife dies, go for it. Okay. But if they're alive, it's just going to cause trouble. It's going to be rivals. Thus, Jacob, Rachel, and Leah. Okay. Questions? All right. Can someone read for me verse 19 to 23?
You shall not approach a woman to uncover her nakedness while she is in her menstrual uncleanness. And you shall not lie sexually with your neighbor's wife and so make yourself unclean with her. You shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord your God. You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. And you shall not lie with any animal, and so make yourself unclean with it. Neither shall any woman give herself to an animal to lie with it. It is perversion.
Okay, so now we have each verse is a different rule. Okay? So verse 19, this builds on Leviticus 15:24 when we talked about being unclean during your period, okay, and everything you touch is unclean and all that. Right? Now, Leviticus 15:24 seemed to be more like if it's an accident, right? If your period starts and it gets on your husband, then he's unclean for 7 days, right? Okay, this specifically says you're not to have sex during a woman's period. Okay, then can someone read for me Leviticus 20, verse 18? 20, verse 18. These rules get flushed out more in Leviticus 20. Okay, so the judgment here is to be cut off, right? This is something that maybe nobody else would know, okay? But God knows. And so he is going to bring judgment. You are going to be cut off, right?
That was for both of them.
Yes, for both of them. Yep, okay? Possibly because there's sacredness in blood, right? In verse chapter 17, right? Don't eat the blood, don't eat the blood. It's atonement, it's life, it's the life, okay? So it's having respect for that. And one of my commentaries said... It's like, this is good for women. Their estrogen is at the lowest during this time. So there you go. So God has your back. Okay. Verse 20. No adultery. Right? In essence, don't have your neighbor's wife. Okay. Exodus 20:14. No adultery. Right? It's one of the Ten Commandments. Can someone read for me Leviticus 20, verse 10? Okay, so punishment, death. Okay, adultery is an assault on the nuclear family. It destroys. All right, in the Bible, adultery is defined as sex with a married or betrothed woman, right? If the woman is a virgin, then you got to pay her dad and there's other things that you do. Okay, you don't die. But if the woman is married or she is betrothed, then there are... Right, if she's in the country or if she's in the city, both of them die. If she's in the country, she gets off, right? Because the idea behind that is if she yells, no one can hear her. Like if she tries to stop it. In the city, right, it's assumed she's complicit because there's enough people around that she can make enough of a ruckus to draw attention if it is unwanted, okay? So, but punishment, death. Okay, then we get verse 21. Says, you shall not give any of your offspring to offer them to Molech, nor shall you profane the name of the Lord your God. I am the Lord. Okay? So this is no child sacrifice. All right? Now, the question is, why in the world are we talking about child sacrifice in the midst of a chapter on sex? Right? So some people think that this means, because it doesn't specifically say, right? It says, offer them to Molech. Okay, some people think this is giving your children to be temple prostitutes at like a temple for Molech. But throughout the Old Testament, whenever he talks like Molech is discussed, it's typically paired with child sacrifice. Okay, let's go to 2 Kings 23, verse 10. Second Kings 23, verse 10.
He also defiled Topa, mm-hmm. which is in the valley of the son of
Hinnom,
that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire from them.
Okay, so this is Josiah, and he is trying to reform Israel, bring them back to the law. And what does he do? He defiles Topheth, right, so that you couldn't offer your child to Molech as a child sacrifice, make them pass through the fire. Okay, so this is one of the reforms he did to stop child sacrifice in Israel. Okay, let's go to Jeremiah 32:35. Jeremiah 32:35. J- Jeremiah 32, 35.
He built the high places of Baal that are in the valley of Ben-Hinnom to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire of Moloch, which I had not commanded them, nor had it entered my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin.
Okay, so Jeremiah is speaking out against offering your children as sacrifices to Moloch. Okay, one more. Go back to Leviticus. And can someone read for me? I thought this was interesting. Leviticus 20, verses 2 through 5.
Should ever disregard that man when he gives any of his offspring to Moloch, so as to not put him to death, then I myself will set my face against that man and against his family, and I will cut off from among their people both him and all those who play the harlot after him by playing the harlot after him.
Okay, so what I found interesting about this is the punishment is death and being cut off. Like, there's double here. You're to be stoned to death if you offer your offspring to Molech. But if you are not following the law and don't do it, God's going to do it. Okay? God is going to make sure that this person is judged because this is such an abomination against him to offer little children, right, that he's going to make sure that you're punished even if man does not uphold the law. Okay? Adultery says you're going to be put to death, but it doesn't say, well, if you don't, then God's going to. Right, not that he won't necessarily do that, but it's specific here. If man does not bring the justice that is deserved, then God for sure will. And we know ultimately God will, but here it's explicitly stated.
But do we know that that offer up couldn't mean that it's offered for prostitution? Because it doesn't seem like they specify.
Right, they don't.
Either sacrifice or prostitution.
Right, they don't specifically. It doesn't specifically say, but it seems, I mean, why would God be so upset about a temple prostitute specifically to Molech and not another one, right? And it seems to be that Molech was the god that you offered, that demanded child sacrifice. So that would be what how I would think. But there are some that think it is to be a temple prostitute. Yeah.
I mean, knowing what I know of today, when that type of thing takes place, it ends in death.
Yeah.
Child.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Maybe there was something else as well. Yep. Okay. And it says, verse 29, you shall not profane the name of your God. Okay. This is what this is. It would be giving God a bad name or a bad reputation, okay, that his name is profaned, right? Because God does not demand child sacrifice. And so if Israel, who is known to be the nation of Yahweh, starts sacrificing child sacrifices, right, that's going to reflect badly on God. Okay, verse 22, no homosexuality, okay? Genesis 19, we know Sodom and Gomorrah got destroyed for this. Can someone read for me Leviticus 20, verse 13? Okay, so death is the penalty, right? And in Leviticus 18, it says it is an abomination. Okay, this means abhorrent or repugnant. Okay, so this is not how things are supposed to be. Okay, verse 23, no bestiality. this is in Exodus 22:19. It says the same thing. And then I'll read it, Leviticus 20, verse 15 and 16. It says, if there is a man who lies with an animal, he shall surely be put to death. You shall also kill the animal. If there is a woman who approaches any animal to mate with it, you shall kill the woman and the animal. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood guiltiness is upon them. Okay, so punishment, death. And it says it is a perversion back in Leviticus 18. It says it is a perversion. The root of this Hebrew word is to mix. Okay, so this is a mixing of different species, and it goes against God's given boundaries between man and animal. So this is mixing two things that ought not to be mixed. Holiness in the Pentateuch is a matter of purity, of keeping apart what God has created to be separate. Man and animal are separate. You do not mix them. Okay, so verses 19 to 23, basically the punishment for all of these is death. Right? Verse 19, it's to be cut off, right? Which is God dealing with it. But the rest of it is man is supposed to intervene and put this person to death who does any of these things. Questions? Okay. Can someone read for me verses 24 to 30? Leviticus 18, 24 to 30.
Do not defile yourselves by any of these things, for by all these the nations which I am casting out before you have become defiled. For the land has become defiled, therefore I have brought its punishment upon it. So the land has spewed out its inhabitants. But as for you, you are to keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not do any of these abominations, neither the native nor the alien who sojourns among you. For the men of the land who have been before you have done all these abominations, and the land has become defiled, so that the land will not spew you out, should you defile it, as it has spewed out the nation which has been before you. For whoever does any of these abominations, whose persons who do so shall be cut off from among their people. Thus you are to keep my charge, that you do not practice any of the abominable customs which have been practiced before you, so as not to defile yourselves with them. I am the Lord your God.
Okay, so this is the conclusion, and it is a much longer recap of the intro, right? Israel is to be different than the nations, okay, especially in this area of morality. Can we go back to Genesis 15? And can someone read for me verse 16? Genesis 15, verse 16. This is a long time ago. We talked about Genesis 15.
16 verse.
Chapter 15, verse 16.
And they shall come back here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete.
Okay, so God is talking to Abram, and he's telling him about the 400 years in Egypt, okay? And the reason Israel had to go to Egypt and grow into a nation there was because the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. God is not done giving the Amorite, which is symbolic for all the Canaanites, a chance, okay? So fast forward to Leviticus 18, right? The iniquity of the Amorites complete. Okay, and what is the land going to do to them? Spit them out. Spew them out because of what they have done, of who they are, of their actions. Okay, so God has given the Canaanites a chance. They even got 400 years more right after Abram came into the land. And God says, I'm going to give you all this, but just not yet. Okay, why? Because the iniquity of the Amorites is not complete. Now it is complete. And this passage speaks of the conquest of Canaan as if it's already been done, right? They still have 40 years to wander, right, after this point, before they get to go in the land. I mean, God's going to give them the land, they sin, right? And then he sends them out to wander.
Going back to Moloch,
yes.
Of the Ammonites.
Yes, I forgot to say that. Molech is the god of the Ammonites. And actually, we didn't turn there. I forgot. I missed it in my notes. 1 Kings 11:7. Do you want to know who was one of the first ones to build to the god of the Ammonites, Molech? Solomon. It is Solomon because of all his wives, and he built each of them a temple to their own God. Okay? So 1 Kings 11:7, it is Solomon who builds a temple for Molech, who is the god of the Ammonites. Okay? Which is sad. I mean, you have David, and then it's his son who introduces basically all this pagan worship to Israel. Okay. Okay, so the Amorite, the Canaanite, their sin is now complete. The land is going to spew them out, vomit them out, right? God hates this kind of perversion. And there's a warning in here. Israel, if you do not listen, if you act just like them, what's going to happen to you? The land's going to spew you out. Okay, this is God's land, and it will not tolerate this kind of activity. And what happened to Israel? They got it. They got spewed out. Okay, right? They went into exile to Babylon and Assyria. Now, because God is faithful and because he has made a covenant with Israel, right? He's brought them back to the land. He brought them back to the land after exile. He even brought them back to the land after 70 AD. Okay? Well, it wasn't for almost 2,000 years, but he did it. They're back in the land. Okay? But they were warned. If you do not listen to these laws, if you act like the Canaanite, you will get thrown out. Questions on that section? Okay, for this, okay, so especially about homosexuality, there is an argument out there that says, see, homosexuality is condemned, but it's condemned in the law. Well, Christ has come and the law is no more. Right? The ceremonial law is thrown out. We're in a new age of Christendom. Therefore, now homosexuality is okay. All right? There is that argument. Okay. But we don't have time. But the New Testament repeats these same sexual prohibitions. Okay? Incest is prohibited in 1 Corinthians 5:1-5. That's where Paul says, hey, there is sin in the church that doesn't even exist among the Gentiles. A man has his father's wife. Okay, adultery, I mean, there's multiple places, but one of the places is Hebrews 13:4. Homosexuality, Romans 1:27. I don't know if bestiality is explicitly expressed in the New Testament, but that should just be plainly obvious to anyone. That doesn't mean Romans 1:27, and that's the Romans 1 road, when God is giving man over, right? Which we see in our own nation. When God takes his restraining hand of sin off, man comes up with all kinds of perversions.
Well, my first immediate thought was, just because Jesus came to fulfill the law doesn't mean God's view of sin changed.
Right. I know. But that's the argument used, that because we don't observe the ceremonial law anymore, well, let's just conveniently throw homosexuality in with that, and then now it's okay. All right, questions. Leviticus 17 and 18.